Excuse me.
Turn off all the cell
phones.
Turn off all the cell phones.
I turned mine off.
We're all good.
That's it.
There. It's like the beginning of movies today. They have this introduction to please turn off the cell phones.
Yeah, and then some with cell phones still goes off.
Yeah, I always turn it off. I was just
okay. We are still in Parakah Bet, but we are essentially at this point moving into the heart of the story, which is the tragedy of Nov. So we spent the last couple of classes looking at the beginning of the Parak, the story of David as he runs. He goes to Achish, he goes to Gath, and he goes to Marat Adulam, gathers together his group, Reit Kaptzu Elav, Kolish Matzok, his gedud that will kind of travel with him over the next number of years, this kind of band of, you can say it, band of merry men, and although they're described as malcontents, I'm not sure how merry they are, but that's a separate issue. And
they were malcontents, but then when they got with David, they were merry.
There you go. Then he goes to Moab, and last class we talked about the story of the tragedy of Moab. What happens to his family when he sends them to Moab, and ultimately the king of Moab kills them all, and kind of a very dark moment in David's life. And now we go back to the other part of the story. We had left the story of Nov, where David had gone to Nov, gotten from Achimelech bread and food and a weapon and what else was going on there. Remember, if we talked about the fact that he saw Doeg Adomi, one of Shaul's servants there, recognized him, got a little nervous, kind of left that story in the middle. And now, after the digression into David's journeys to Gath, to Marat Adulam, to Moab, kind of looked at the various places where David is off to, our scene changes back to, where's Shaul in all of this? What's going on back at the palace? Right? Or is meanwhile back at the palace, kind of. So that's where we're up to, Pasuk Hey Vav. Actually, let's just start from Hey. Vayomer Gad Hanavi, this is where we left off. Vayomer Gad Hanavi El David, Lo Teshev Bamtzuda, Lech Uvatalacha Eretz Yehuda, Uvatalacha Eretz Yehuda, Vayelach David Vayvo Yar Charet. God.
Can you tell me where you are?
Perek Chavet, Pasuk
Hey. 353, chapter 22.
22.
5.
I mean,
yeah, 5.
Thank you.
Works. Thank you. I just like Perek Chavet, Pasuk Hey, but that works
right,
too.
Right, but we figured it out.
God, Hanavi, is the Navi who accompanies God, David through all of these journeys and travails and the David in exile, let's call it. As David in exile is moving from place to place, that's where God accompanies him. Later, when he gets to Yerushalayim, the Nevi'im will switch and we'll have Natan HaNevi. And he says to David, enough hiding. You're in the fortress, outskirts, overlooking Moab, Mitzpeh Moab, Mitzudat Moab. We talked last week about the fact that this mitzvah could be a reference to the hilltop of Masada or somewhere in that area. He says to him, enough. You need to come back to Eretz Yehuda. You need to come back to the land of your brethren, so to speak. Stop hiding in Chutz La'aretz, in Eretz Moav, and in Eretz Plishtim. And so he does. Meanwhile, back at the farm, Vayishma Sha'u. Vayishma Shaul, ki noda David va'anashim asher ito. Shaul yoshev ba'giv'a tachat ha'eshev b'rama, v'chanito b'yado, v'chol avadav nitzavim alav. He had this picture. Right? Literally, meanwhile, back at the farm. Vayishma Shaul, Shaul hears that David and his men were spotted, so to speak. Noda, they were spotted. And Shaul is sitting in the Givat Shaul. He's sitting under this tree, Tachat HaEshel, which I guess is some reference to the palace, or to some tree that was near the palace. Ramah. Chanito
b'yado. He still has that sword.
Shaul will always be with a spear. Shaul will never be without a spear from the moment of spear, sword, whatever it's called, from the moment of the first time he threw it at David. Shaul is always, we talked about this once before, Shaul is always with the spear, and every time we have one of these stories, Mechanito b'yado. Just a description of Shaul's paranoia. Can you just imagine the scene? Shaul is sitting on his throne, all of his servants standing around him, all of his, he's trying to, you can imagine the intelligence operation trying to find David. There's a manhunt going on. Everybody's trying to figure out where he is. He's got all the intelligence services at his fingertips looking for David. They can't find him. This is going on. And we are, finally, some information comes. David has been spotted. Noda David v'anashim asher ito. So before you even move to the next verse, I just want to get a sense of the timetable here. Where in the sequence of events that we've so far seen is this conversation between Shaul and his men taking place? Actually, you know what? Let's finish the paragraph. Vayomer Shaul avadav anitzavim alav. Further, he says to the servants who are with him, Shimuna ben Yemini, listen, you Binyaminites. Okay, what does Bnei Yemini mean?
Men from tribe of Benjamin.
Right, so Binyamin is an interesting name for a Shevet because it's hard to conjugate. Ruven, Ruveni, Shimon, Shimoni, Gad, Gadi, right? Tangent. Ben Yamin means somebody from Yamin. Right? So how do you conjugate Ben Yamin, somebody from Benjamin? You can say Benyamini, but it's often in Tanakh written as two words. Ben Yamin. So if it's written as two words, the plural becomes Benei Yamini. In other words, it's in itself a hyphenated word, Benyamin, somebody of the tribe of Yamin, or the right hand, like we talked about the name Benjamin, but it's not one word, it's a hyphenated word, Benjamin. We pronounce it Benjamin or Benjamin, but it's really two words, and therefore the description of somebody from the tribe of Benjamin is complicated. So here it's Bnei Yamini, children of Yamini, right? It's conjugated in the plural. You have, for example, in the Smichut, you have, for example, in Megillat Esther, Mordechai is described as Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shishana B'Rah Shmo Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shimi Ben Kish Ish Yemini. Right? That's not a description of him being right-handed. That's a description of him being of Shevet Binyamin. Okay, so, but there it just says Yemini. So it's just an interesting name because it's conjugated either as Yemini or Bnei Yamin. It's not consistent in how it's conjugated. Does that make sense? So Bnei Yamini is mean people from Shevet Yamin or Shevet Binyamin. So what does he say to the members of? Remember, he is himself from the Shevet of Binyamin. Gam lekulchem yiten ben Yishai sadot uchramim lekulchem yasim serei alafim veserei meot ki ksharetem kulchem alai ve'en golet ozni bichrot bniim ben Yishai ve'en cholem mikem alai ve'golet ozni ki ekim bni et avdi alai le'orev kayom hazeh. I read these two psukim together because it's syntactically you can't separate them. What does he say? Turns to the people of Binyamin. And he's essentially accuses them of
helping him.
Either helping him or not coming forth with information. Withholding the information, harboring, hiding, not disclosing. Gam lukolchem yiten ben Yishai sadot uchramim lucholam yasim sarei alafim v'sarei meyot. You think that Ben Yishai is going to give you fields and vineyards? He's going to make you officers and captains? That's not the job of David. That's the job of
the king.
So you think by harboring David, by hiding him, by protecting him, he's going to become loyal to you, he's going to become the king and pay you back, he's going to be better to you than I am, I from member of your own tribe, right? It's a conversation to Bnei Yemini. So to his inner circle, to his inner people, to his close confidants who are all from his own Shevet, which is in itself somewhat odd, right? You're the king of all of Israel. Why are all your inner servants and your inner cabinet members all from your tribe?
Makes you more safe.
Right? Again, comes back to the same issue of Shaul's paranoia, whether he had other people that he removed, or... But he certainly is keeping... You know the old adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer? Well, he's got the first half done. Right? He's keeping his friends close. I don't know about his enemies close. But he certainly has his tribe. And he says to them, you think that David is going to repay you better? He's going to pay you better? Think that David is going to be better to you, give you better positions? And what's motivating, what's going through his mind? Why does he think that the Bnei Yamini are in fact siding with David? There he goes on to say, for you have all rebelled against me. You have
conspired
against me. Lukshor Kesher is a political term, conspiracy. You have conspired against me. How? By not disclosing information. They haven't done anything except not disclosed information. Ein golet ozni bichrot bni im ben Yishai. By hiding the key piece of information, which is what? That my son Yonatan, not where he is yet, but that my son Yonatan made a brit with David. The accusation is that they've hidden from him the brit made between Yonatan and David. This is about Yonatan. We're back to Yonatan.
And has stirred up my servant against me.
Right. Nobody's told me, nobody's informed me, nobody's shared with me the key piece of information that my son is the instigator in all of this. That,
how does he know?
That my son has made all my servants rebel against me.
How does he know then?
I don't know if he knows, and I don't think it's true. David, Yonatan hasn't conspired, made all of his servants rebel against him. It's paranoia, but notice who it's targeted against. His fear is about David. He's paranoid about David, but notice who his target is.
It's
back to see Yonatan. It's poor Yonatan.
But
he gets it.
Right.
He is right that
the.
Correct, but Yonatan did not stir up a rebellion.
No, he didn't do that.
He's
fired.
I mean, I think he's all right.
He needs help.
We could fire them and get new ones, but the fact that he's back to Yonatan. It's like we left Yonatan two chapters ago. Where did Yonatan come into the picture? But to Shaul, Yonatan is an untouchable. He can't get to Yonatan. He wants to, but he can't get to Yonatan. Why can't he get to Yonatan? Remember the last time he tried to accuse Yonatan of something publicly? Way back when in Perek Yudalet, the Battle of Michmas, where Yonatan was guilty of treason in his mind, and he wanted to have him executed. Who saved him? Who saved Yonatan then?
The Kohen?
No.
The
people.
The people
stood between him and Yonatan. They said, over our dead bodies. Right? You can't. Yonatan's untouchable. Because Yonatan has the support and the people. So, and David and Yishai knows that Yonatan's untouchable. So Yonatan is able to make a breach with David and enable David to escape and then come back to the palace and continue his job because he's untouchable. And when Shaul finally gets frustrated that nobody's telling him anything and nobody's sharing him with information and nobody's informing on David, he's got this enormous apparatus of intelligence and spies and armies and soldiers, and he can't figure out which one guy is hiding. Not only the most recognizable guy in all of Israel can't find him. He turns to his servants and he says, "What are you doing? You're hiding him from me? You're hiding Yonatan from me? Like, what?" His frustration is boiling over.
Poor guy.
And that will will play a role in when he finally finds a target, he hits it hard.
Goes berserk.
Right? Because he's so frustrated. And his frustration is not only at David at this point, it's also at Yonatan. Right? And by extension, his own people, his own servants. He's trying to win them over. Listen, you think David can be better to you than I can? I'm the king. I can give you Sarei Meot, Sarei Alafim. I can give you all the positions you want. I can give you all the land you want. That's my power. Go back to Perkhet. It's my power to confiscate land and give it to who I want. It's my power to appoint positions in the army to whoever I want. I'm the king. You think you're going to get a better deal with David? This is all part of his paranoia. At the same time, an interesting question as to the timetable of this conversation. Question of timetable. When is this conversation taking place?
I would say after the story of No. When he sees Doeg, and Doeg comes back and calls him.
So let's see what our options are. Okay? Here's the sequence of Parakop Aleph and Chav Bet. We'll just chart it out. Parakop Aleph from the end of Perikof Aleph, from time where when it comes to Nov.
I'm always asking you about time, but why is this so important? There must be some reason that this
time. Yeah, I will share that secret with you in a few minutes.
So the story of him running the David.
Okay, so
Perikof
Aleph
goes back to the palace. So
David goes to Nov.
Yeah.
Is Psukim is Perchav Aleph? Psukim Aleph through.
I would say six.
In Nov? No conversation in Nov. Yud Aleph. Aleph to Yud Aleph. Perchav Aleph.
Yeah.
Aleph is David in Nov. Agreed?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Then, Yud Bet through Tet Zayin, the end of Perichah Bet. Tet Zayin is David in
God.
Be careful with God. Okay, just make our distinctions clear. All right. Comes to Achish Melech Gat. Eretz Plishtim. Then he leaves Eretz Plishtim. And we come to Perakov Bet. Correct?
Yeah, he goes to Adulam.
Perakov Bet. Sukim Aleph through. Ma'arat Adulam in Ma'arat Adulam.
Sukkim
Aleph through
Bet.
I think so. Aleph through Bet. And there he gathers around his
Gedud. And he goes to Mitzpeh Moab.
Then he goes to Mitzpeh Moab. So Sukkim Gimel through Hey. Mm-hmm. Actually, technically, it's Gimel through Dalet.
Dalet, because God tells me.
Okay, Gimel through Dalet. David in Mitzpeh
Moav.
Moav in the Mitzudah.
And then, hey, David is instructed by God, in the name of God, to leave and come back to Eretz
Yehuda.
Eretz Yehuda, specifically Ya'ar Charet. And then, Vav, through.
Near the end of the parak. Okay. Parak through the end of the parak.
Pasuk Vav Gimel is the story of Shaul
under his tree
and Ritzichat Kohanei Nov. Right? The execution of the people of Nov. So our question is, and all we've read so far is Pasuk Vav.
Or Vav through Chet.
You know what? Let's divide this up. We're back to Shaul. Vav through Chet is Shaul in his palace. Yivat Shaul in a conversation with his servants. And then he's told in Pasuk Tet through the end of the Perek Doeg and no. Okay? So, before we get to Egg's report, this story, Shaul's back in his palace, needing to find out, right, gathers all his people around him, finding out what's going on, and Egg reports back, etc. Where in this sequence does it belong? The logical assumption is that since we're back to the story of Nov, and Doeg is the one who is going to report on him, and Doeg was spotted back here in the story of Nov, the logical assumption is that all of this is a digression in order to identify, in order to tell us the story of David once he leaves, the backstory. But in the meantime, this, look, it would seem, is a back to, or as I said earlier, back on the farm. This is all happening where and when? Shortly after?
David goes to Nov.
Goes to Nov. Right? The assumption is that as David is going off to Gat and the Marat Adulam and to Moab, well, that's already post. It's already later. In the meantime, Doeg comes back, reports to Shaul. Shaul is sitting there trying to figure out where he is. Doeg comes running in and he says, "Hey, I got him. I got your man." Right? That's the next pasuk. Vayan Doeg Adomi. Vunitzav alav de Shaul vayomar. Ra'iti et ben Yishai. Ba nove. Alachimelech ben Achituv. Come back to those pasuk in a moment. That lechara would be the sequence and it would make sense. Doeg is a spy. Here's of David, he sees David, goes running back to Shaul, finds Shaul standing there with his people trying to figure out where David is, and he reports and he says, "Ah, I found him." But
for sure, by the time he gets back there, he still would have no idea where he is.
Correct. So he doesn't come to Nov with the expectation of finding David. He comes to Nov with the expectation of exacting retribution against the rebellious people.
Not like we have Twitter.
My question is that is this accurate? Is this story taking place here? And I'm going to argue that that is not the case. I'm going to actually argue, we're going to put the story a little bit later.
That's a good thing I didn't write all that down.
You just have to move your arrow.
You can't put it here. That wouldn't work. But I am going to put it.
Why?
And there's two questions. There's why, and who cares?
That's
right. Those are two very good questions.
I didn't ask who cares. I just asked why.
Or, to put it nicer, why and why does it matter? Why do I assume that this conversation, forget Doeg for a moment, but the conversation between Shaul that preempts Doeg's response is happening here, and not here. So go back to Pasuk Vav and read it carefully.
Vishma Shal Kinoda David Vashim Ashiri Tel.
Okay.
because that's where he got his merry men.
Right. What Shaul hears is not where David is. Shaul hears about David va'anashim asher ito. What he's hearing isn't about the whereabouts of David. He doesn't know where David is. He knew where David was. If he knew that he was spotted here or spotted here or spotted here, he'd go running. He doesn't hear that where he is. What he hears is about the fact that David is gathering people with him. And people with him spells army.
Treason.
Right? People with him spells army. Spells right?
Popularity.
Rebellion. Right? This is mutiny. This is right. Rebellion. This is revolt. This is an army. Gedud. This is a military force. That's Anashim Asher Ito. So to Shaul, it's now become a moment of do or die. This is now, he's hearing about the army that David has put together. So that's what prompts his conversation. You think that David is going to give you positions of Sarei Meot and Sarei Chamishim, positions of captains and officers in his newfound army? It's not a random question. He's building an army. You think David is going to give you positions in this newfound army? You think that David is going to be good to you? You people from Shevet Binyamin? He's going to build his army out of Shevet Yehudah. And then where is he going to go? Like this is, it's all part of this gedud, part of this vanashim asher ito, which means that it's not happening here. It's happening in the aftermath of this period of time in Marat Adulam, which how long it takes we don't know. But during that time in which David is beginning to gather around him his followers and his people and his gedud and his all of the embittered people who marei nefesh. Suddenly Shaul hears about that and now he's paranoid. And now he sees the result of what he's been afraid of, which is David building an army. That's one part of the story. If that's the case, then that insight or understanding generates another question. And it's a question about Doeg. Because we've been operating under the assumption that Doeg is sitting here in Nov, sees David, and says, I got him. Runs back to Shaul and says, I saw him. But that's not what happened. Think about it for a second. If David is gone between Doeg spotting David in the city of Nov, David has gone off to Gath. He's come back from Gat. He's in Marat Adulam. He's gathering his forces. Only then does Shaul hear about this gedud that he's putting together and confront his officers and his people. And then says Doeg in Pasuk Tet, Vaya'an Doeg Adomi, Vuhu Nitzav al Avdei Shaul, amongst the people. What is Nitzav al Yodei Shaul? Look at back in Pasuk Zion. Who is Shaul speaking to?
Oh,
Dov
Hanitzavim Alav.
Right. David is speaking, Shaul is speaking to Avadav and Nitzavim Alav, his servant standing with him. Amongst the people standing with him, amongst his servants, is Doeg Nitzav Alav De Shaul. Right. It's the same phrase. Mm-hmm. Amongst those people that Shaul is speaking to is Doeg. Vayomer, he says to him, Ra'iti et ben Yishai, Banove, I saw David, I saw him come to Nov. And when he got there, he sought guidance of God through the Urim V'Tumim. Nachimelech gave him food. And David gave him the sword of Goliath Plishti. So now he's got the whole report. But embedded in that report is a huge challenge.
He didn't really volunteer the information until Shaul confronted them.
Where was Doeg all this time?
And if he was like supposed to be working for Shaul, what was he doing up there?
Well, no, he went to Nov, it's the Mishkan. It said that he went to the Mishkan to bring Korbanot and he got stuck there. Right? He happened to have been there. Nov is the Mishkan. So it's not surprised that he would be there. But
He didn't have
blood. Why didn't he come back to shoot right away? Now that that challenge of he's been sitting on this information for all of this time is a double challenge. It's a challenge to Doeg, it's a challenge to Shaul, and a challenge to Doeg. Meaning, the same question that we're asking of Doeg, in theory, Shaul should be asking of Doeg as well.
When he said he's conspiring, I mean, does he apply maybe it's Doeg now? Is that what he means?
Right. So suddenly Doeg says, you know what, I'm not going to be accused of conspiring. I'll share that information. But where was he up until now?
Right, that's
so it's a mystery, and we don't have, it's one of those mysteries that we can see the points, we can see the structure of the story building, but where was Doeg all of this time, and why wasn't he reporting to David? Unless we assume, a little bit differently than we've been assuming up until now, that Doeg is the spy, loyal to Shaul, comes running back, says to Shaul, I got him, I found him, he's here, he's hiding in Nov, let's go and get him. But that's not what happened. So come back to the background. How many people outside of Shaul's inner circle at this point know of David's insubordination, rebellion, that Shaul has accused him of treason? How many people know of the broader conflict between Shaul and David? Certainly Ahimelech didn't know, right? So it's becoming, the circle is growing, but it's quite possible that Doeg is just another guy in the officers, servants and officers of the king. He's not yet quite aware of the extent to which this rebellion has grown. Sees David. David gets worried, clearly, because he runs. But Doeg sees David, and then he doesn't do anything with that information until Shaul says to his servants, Yonatan is
inspiring.
He's fermenting a rebellion in the ranks. Mm-hmm. Who does he accuse here? Yonatan. Of conspiring against him by building a pact with David and building an army. You can't build an army unless you have support of
people.
Right? The people and, to some extent, the king, somebody in the king's arena. Right? So if David's building an army, it's possible that he's building it with the support of
Yonatan.
Suddenly this whole accusation becomes much bigger than it really was originally. And suddenly now it's very public that he sees David as treason, and anybody who knows of his whereabouts can be accused of treason and accused of conspiring with the rebellion. The conversation is changing because it's become public. So now Doeg comes with that information. Now that it's public, now that it's out there, now that David, now that Shaul has made this public accusation. So Doeg raises his hand and he says, "My dear king, I didn't know. But if you want to know, I saw him several months ago in the city of Nov."
Is Doeg being political? Is he trying to protect himself? You know, taking the lay of the land, seeing where he's going to come out?
At this point, he probably is. He's probably decided, you know, if it's a choice between David and Shaul, his loyalties will lie with Shaul. My guess is that up until this point, he hasn't come forward with that information because the extent of the rift between Shaul and David has not become that known. This is really where that circle has now widened, widened to Avadav, to his servants, to Bnei Binyamin. We really expanded the conversation to the point where it's very public. So now Doeg comes forward. But when he comes forward, he also has to worry about his own skin a little bit. And what's the potential response of Shaul right away to Doeg? Remember what he's accused all of the people of Binyamin of doing in these first three psukim, Hey Vav Zayin Chet. He's accused them of
helping the vegan.
Of harboring and hiding and conspiring by not sharing
information.
Here comes Doeg and says, oh, 4 months ago I saw him in Nov. What's Shaul's, what's the logical response of
Why
paranoid Shaul?
Why didn't you tell me soon?
So where have you been?
What's the secret?
Like there's a potential for Shaul to turn his wrath on Doeg. That's a worry for Doeg. So Doeg does something which I think is very intentional and very underhanded. He shifts the blame. He shifts the focus of the blame to Achimelech. And he does so in a remarkable way. So now let's go back to those psukim. Now we're going to reread those psukim. It's really criminal. I mean, criminal is too kind a word for it. Excuse me?
Credit for doing that. He's trying to save his own skin.
Doeg? I'll give him credit in Gehenna.
Chazal
say there are four non-kings, Hedyot, what the Gemara calls Hedyot, non-kings in Tanakh who have no chelik in Olam Haba. And one of them is Doeg Adomi.
He's a king?
No, he's a non-king. There are four Hedyotot. Okay. There are four non-kings. Okay. Right? Gehazi, Nechatovel, it's a whole bunch. There's four people in Tanakh of whom Chazal say, Ein lem chelek l'olam haba. One of them is Doeg Adomi. I have no soft spot for him. Which is fine.
He's manipulative, obviously.
He's also a murderer. I mean, we'll see in the end. He's the one who kills everybody. He's a
he didn't have to say it because no one really knew he was there when David.
And
no
he could
one
have
else
just kept his mouth shut.
Could have kept his mouth shut. But if David ever found, if Shaul ever found out, right, that David had been there and that Doeg had been there too, he had just announced publicly that he's holding anybody who knows whereabouts of David and doesn't disclose, he holds them accountable. So he's just made a public declaration that says, if you know the whereabouts of David or have any information related to him and you don't disclose that to me, you will be accused of being a traitor.
But
take your sides. Take your sides. This is an all-out war. Pick your side. There's no neutrality here. So what does Doeg say?
He said a lot.
Pasuk Tet. Vayan Doeg Adomi, v'hu nitzav al avdei Shaul. Vayomar, ra'iti et ben Yishai. So first of all, how does he refer to David?
Ben Yishai.
That's a pejorative description that was reserved for Shaul. Shaul calls him Ben Yishai several times. Says Doeg, I saw Ben Yishai. Okay, so that already kind of brings them a little bit closer to Banove, city of Nov, El Achimelech Ben Achituv. There's an oddity about that phrase. What's the oddity?
What is it, Ben Achituv?
Achimelech Ben Achituv.
Shaul
will refer to him as Ben Achituv. Shaul later on will call him Ben Achituv. In Pasuk Yudbet. Vayomer Shaul Shmana Ben Achituv. Shaul will have that kind of chutzpah. I don't think that kind of chutzpah has yet reached the department of Doeg. But another kind of chutzpah has. Achimelech Ben Achituv. Who is Achimelech Ben Achituv? What's his role?
He's the
Kohen Gadol, right? Yeah. How do you refer to him as Achimelech ben Achituv and not call him Achimelech ben Achituv HaKohen? That's like referring to the chief rabbi of Israel and calling him, hey, mister.
It's not respectful.
Achimelech ben Achituv HaKohen! No, Achimelech ben Achituv. The Mr. Achimelech over there. And then look what David did. Vaish Alubashem. He sought God's counsel. And Vitzedan Natanlo. Achimelech gave him food. Vet Cherev Goliath Plishti Natanlo.
And Achimelech gave him what? Goyatzor. Notice the phrase Natan lo twice. Natan lo tzeda, Natan lo cherev. He gave him the sword. He gave him food. Who gave him? Esther Achimelech over there gave him food. The focus of his speech is not about David. It's about Achimelech. And in that moment, Doeg shifts all of Shaul's anger to Achimelech. It's a brilliant and evil move.
But didn't Doeg have a risk just because Shaul would say that Shaul would be curious about why the Kohen Gadol was giving him all these things, you know, that without telling Shaul that this was going on? I mean,
well, first of all, Doeg remember
knew that and saw it and didn't tell Shaul, hey, I saw some strange things going on and no.
If they're strange, first of all, we don't necessarily know that they're strange, that he asked for bread. Yeah, we don't know how much was public. But second of all,
even the sword of God, yes, sure, Saul would be interested in that.
Yeah, okay. We don't know that David is not a... Remember the conversation back then. Achimelech said to David, why are you here alone? What was David's answer? Why are you here without your men? I'm on the king's mission. I'm on a secret mission for the king. Nobody knows the extent of the rebellion yet. Nobody knows the extent of the what's going on. David makes takes the position that he's on the king's mission and a secret mission for the king. He had to leave quickly. He has no weapon. He has no uniform. He has no men. He's on a secret mission. If you take him at his word, Achimelech took him at his word, why wouldn't Doeg? Until conversation that Shaul has with his men about harboring David as a terrorist, as a rebel, and suddenly the conversation changes. So now he goes back to that event in Nov, and he lays the blame on the squarely at the feet of Achimelech, who gave him food, who gave him the sword. Remember, Achimelech didn't want to give him the sword. He said, "That's the sword. You want to take it." And David insists, you give it to me. Doeg places all the blame on the shoulders of Achimelech. It's really a remarkable move and a somewhat evil move. Did I leave the source pages in the office? I did. That's smart. Try to copy them and then left them in the office. Okay.
Do you know where they are, really? I can
go get
them.
Oh, that's okay. They're on the photocopier, I think.
Do you want me to just go get them?
I don't know if the office... Oh, the office should be open.
I'll go get them.
Okay, thank you. They just should be on the photocopier.
We came in together.
Now, in addition to all of that, of the three things that Doeg accuses Achimelech of doing. Now, what are the three things he accuses him of doing?
Worm and Tumim.
The food.
And the sword.
And the Urim V'Tumim. Of the three, which is the most accusatory, the most, that's what I'm looking for.
Damning.
Of those three accusations,
I would say the Urim and Tumim.
I would say so too.
Because only a king is supposed to go to the Kohen for that now?
Well, I don't know. So, king, general, army, maybe.
But Golot's sword is pretty bad also when you think about it, isn't it?
Maybe. But I think we have evidence of the fact that Shaul hears this, and what goes through his mind amongst the various accusations is the Urim V'Tumim. That really hits home hard. It hits home hard for several reasons. Number one, and I think you're right, you go to the king, the general, head of the army. The Urim V'Tumim was used to guide somebody in war. Not there.
Hi, it's Judy. I said, this is the photocopier, isn't it?
All right, doesn't matter.
Okay.
You'll be looking for something else and you'll find it.
I will just share it with you. It's a Rashi, I'll just share it with you. Who goes through the Urim V'Tumim? A king, a general, head of the army. It's used in war. It's used to decide if you're going to battle or not going into battle.
Not only that, Shaul himself has had a very checkered relationship with the Urvatum. Go back to the Battle of Michmas, when he was waiting for Goliath, for the Navi, and he decided not to wait, and the Urvatumim, he sought guidance in the Umvatumim, and then he didn't have the patience to wait for an answer, so he said to the Umvatumim, you know what, I know what
never
to do,
mind.
Never mind. And then the Umvatumim didn't answer. A very checkered past of the Umvatumim. So to hear that the very first thing that happened was David went and he sought guidance in the Umvatumim, and the Umvatumim answered him. If you're Shaul, you're hearing all the pieces of the puzzle you don't want to hear. He's got an army now. He's got a gedud, anashim asherito, and he's seeking the umvatumim and the guidance of the umvatumim. It's like it's all your worst fears coming true.
Especially he's paranoid.
In the personality of Shaul, for sure. So he hears bread and he hears weapons. Those are normal. But to hear that he sought guidance of the umvatumim, that sends him into a tailspin. So what does he do? Now he brings Achimelech into the picture. So let's go further. Vayomer Shaul. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayishlach Hamelech likro et Achimelech ben Achituv haKohen. Achimelech ben Achituv, huh?
Kohen.
That's who he is. You can't call him anything but Achimelech ben Achituv haKohen. It's remarkable that Doeg can get away with calling him Achimelech ben Achituv. It just Achimelech ben Achituv haKohen, v'et kol beit aviv haKohenim, asher beno. Not only does it bring Achimelech ben Achituv haKohen, he brings with him the whole group, the whole mishmar, everybody. Like, just bring the whole family. We're going to have a whole conversation here. So kol beit aviv haKohenim, all of the Kohanim operating in the city, in the Mikdash. Let's say there's, 80, 85 Kohanim operating in the Beit HaMikdash at that moment, in the Mishkan. Brings them all together with Achimelech, brings them all to his palace. So note, where are Achimelech and his people, and his Kohanim? In the palace. The 85 Kohanim are in the palace. Okay? There's a reason I threw that number out, and the reason I think that it's important that they're in the palace. Vayomer Shaul, Shmana ben Achituv. Now, if you think Doeg had chutzpah, Achimelech ben Achituv, without giving him the title, Kohen, Shmana ben Achituv is even worse because.
Doesn't even give him his name.
Hey, Shulman, right? Hey, ben Achituv. Vayomer hineni Adoni. The response is, with great respect, here I am, my master. Third person, Adoni. Achimelech is not falling into that trap. Shaul points an accusatory finger at him, and he stays very calm. Hineni Adoni, you called me, I'm here. Vayomer elav Shaul, Lama kshartem alai, ata uven Yishai. What are you conspiring against me for, you and Ben Yishai? This is the conspiracy of Ben Yishai and Ben Achituv. That's how the chapter is going to get written. Betitcha lo lechem v'cherev v'sha'ol lo be'elokim, giving him bread and weapon and advice of the Urim V'Tumim. Notice the sequence. Doeg had it in reverse. Veshalo Bashem, Vegam Tzedah Natano, Vegam Cherev Natano. What does Shaul say to him? Why did you give him Lechem V'Cherev V'Shaulu Belokim? Lakum Elai Lo'orev Kayom Azeh, so that he can lay ambush against me, so that he can build an army, so that he can build a rebellion and a revolt and mutiny. He also leaves out something else in this conversation. How does he describe the sword?
Just a cherev, not just a special sword.
Not cherev goyat. Doeg had called it cherev goyat a plishti. Shaul says to him, why did you give him a sword? Why does he leave out the key description of the sword?
That wasn't so important to him.
Possibly. Or?
No, it refers to what David did with Goliath.
Because it would be a kind of subtle acknowledgement of the fact that this sword belongs to David. David was going to kill Goliath. So to call it the cherev of Goliath, everybody standing around says, well, it wasn't David the one who killed Goliath. So this is a public conversation. We have no knowledge of how public the conversation was between Doeg and Shaul. This is a public conversation.
It's like the dick, because it says Ben Yishai. It doesn't refer to his first name.
Right. And so too by Ben Echidu. How do we know this is a public conversation? Because he's going to turn to his servants momentarily and ask his servants to execute the Kohanim. So it's very public. Whereas the conversation between Doeg and Shaul, we have no idea. But the public acknowledge that this is the cherev of Goliath. That would be too much. Of the three accusations, lechem, cherev, and urim v'tumim, which is the most damning?
Last one.
The urim v'tumim. And that's why Shaul puts it last. And it's the only one of the three to which Achimelech responds. Achimelech's response does not engage at all with the conversation about lechem or cherev. It's only about the Urim V'Tumim because that's the one that's most concerning. Only, as you put it before, only a king or head of an army can ask of the Urim V'Tumim. Bread and sword anybody can take. Urim V'Tumim is different. Vayan Achimelech et HaMelech. Achimelech, you hear the difference. Right? Achimelech is talking to the Melech. The Melech is talking to Ben Achituv. Vayomah. And he talks to him in third person. Umi b'chol avadecha ki David ne'eman. Of all, who amongst the servants of the king is more loyal to you than David? V'chatan HaMelech, son-in-law of the king, talks to the king in third person. Would never say, Ben Yishai. Right? Can you imagine? Sounds speaking to the king and saying, he called him Ben Achituv. He's the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is equal in stature to the Melech. They both wear crowns. You have two kings in Israel. You have three. You have the Melech, Melchei, and Melechim. But in Israel, there are two kings. There's the king, political king, and there's the Kohen Gadol. They're not subordinate one to the other. The Kohen Gadol is of equal status to the Melech. For the Melech to speak to to the Kohen Gadol and call him Ben Achituv is a remarkable chutzpah. Achimelech had every right to respond by saying, listen here, Ben Yishai. But he doesn't. Ben Kish. Sorry. I confuse Shaul and Shmuel, so I can confuse Ben Yishai and Ben Kish. Mi b'chol avadecha ki David ne'eman. V'chatan ha'melech, v'saro mishma'atecha. He's totally obedient to you, totally loyal. Nichbad b'beitecha, most respected in your household. Hayom achiloti lish'olo belokim chalilali. I'm not going to translate that phrase because it's complicated. So hold it for a second. Al yasem ha-melech be'avdo davar b'chol beit David. Do not let the king accuse me and my household of doing anything against the king. Ki lo yada avadecha b'chol zot. Your servant knew nothing of this. Davar katon o gadol. We knew nothing. You want to say that David is acting out of treason? We didn't know about it. He's saying he wants to build himself an army? We knew nothing about this. Remember, the conversation to Nov, the visit to Nov was before the Gedud. We knew nothing.
He came all by himself.
Right? Now, the key phrase in this is the only part of Shaul's accusation he responds to directly, which is Lish'ol Basha. And in that he says, Hayom achiloti lish'ol belokim chalilali. The problem here is how to translate that phrase. So, for example, Let's take the Art School translation. How does the Art School translate it?
Which one?
Beginning of verse 15.
Did I begin today to inquire for him of God?
Did I begin today to inquire of him of God?
For him God. Of God.
For him of
God.
God. Meaning, what's the key syntactical interpretation here? Did I? Lashon she'ila, bitmiya, says Rashi. It's a question. In other words, and I'll read you, this is what I had on the source page. I don't know what I did with them. I photocopied them. I must have left them in my office. I apologize. But here's what Rashi says. Hayom achiloti lish'ola bitmiya. Ze yamim rabim. This is not the first time. For many times. Shetzorach hatzibur bo sheminao motziu meviyat Yisrael. He's been the general and captain of the army of Israel. He's always talked to God. Umeaz ani shoel abakim. I'm always... He's saying that that's a like insubordinate act of treason because I gave him guidance to the Umvatumim. What are you talking about? Hayom achiloti. Today is the first time, and I wasn't born yesterday, and he wasn't born yesterday. The general of Israel, captain of the army, has every right to come to the Umvatumim and ask the Umvatumim. Yeah, I think I this is the first time. Which means that, again, of the three accusations, the only one he responds to is the Urim V'Tumim. And his response, according to Rashi, is, this isn't the first time, it's not the last time, he's always asking of the Urim V'Tumim, it's nothing out of the ordinary, because he's the general. I came to me as a general, like every other time, asked the Urim V'Tumim, and I shared what the Urim V'Tumim said.
That's really like
no
protocol.
Surprise. That's protocol. No surprise. Okay. That's Rashi. But the entire thing is bitmiya, is a question. Ze yamim rabim. I've been doing this many times. Hayom hachiloti? You think it's just today that I've started, that I've given him guidance of the Urim V'Tumim? Right? Where am I? Pasuk Tedvav. Hayom hachiloti l'shol ha'pelokim? Question mark? Just today? Hallelujah. The problem with Rashi's interpretation, and this is the question that bothers the Mefarshim, the problem with this interpretation is, of all of the details that Doeg reports to Shaul, and that Shaul responds to, one detail is not in the story in Perek Chavalef. The entire parak, chapter 21, entire story in Perek of Aleph, that had the conversation, that had all of the events of David in the city of Nov, of all of the events there, Doeg describes one part of the story that's not in chapter 21. Shaul asks of one part of the story that's not in chapter 21, and Achitophel, and Achimelech responds about the part of the story that's not in the chapter 21, namely... Right. If you go back to the story, it's not there. The conversation about food is there. The conversation about the sword is there. There is no conversation about the Urim V'Tumim.
No wonder I couldn't remember it.
Right. So now the irony is, here comes Shaul, makes the accusation of accusations that he's treason. Army and between the army and the Urim V'Tumim, we're dealing with a full scale war of a self appointed king. That's treason in public. But the key piece of the story, first of all, the army hasn't happened yet when David was in Nov. And the key piece of the story, which is to seek the guidance of the Urim V'Tumim, wasn't there either. So what is Rashi going to say? What's Rashi's answer to that puzzle? Why is it not in chapter 21?
Because it didn't happen.
No, it did happen. According to Rashi, Bitmiya ze yamim rabim shetzorach hatzibur moshe miminao motzi umevi et yisrael umeaz ani shu'el lo be'elokim. This is all... Right, why is it not in the story?
Because it was ordinary.
Because it was too ordinary. It wasn't extraordinary. It was ordinary. He comes all the time with the guidance of the Urim V'Tumim. Like, I paid attention to it. Bread, that was right. That he was hungry, that he hadn't eaten for 3 days, that already was really odd. That he didn't have a sword, that's odd. but that he would seek guidance at the Umvatumim, that's standard procedure.
That's why he went there.
Right? So that's, to Rashi, that's the response.
Yes.
Again, it's a little bit of a weak answer because it still deals with the question of Chalilali. What does the Chalilali mean? Like, God forbid that I would do such a thing? What do you mean that I wouldn't? What's the Chalilali for? This is, he's saying, I admit, I did share with him the Umbatumim. I do it all
the first time that he did it.
Okay, so that's how Rashi would have to read it. This isn't the first time I've done it before, but it's an odd phrase, Chalilali, to throw into here. So the Radak flips it around. Radak takes the opposite approach to this question, and we're going to offer a third possibility as well. The Radak's suggestion, and again, I'm just going to read it and translate it, and you're just going to listen. The Yesh Lefarsho Belotmia, we can interpret this phrase not as a question. Klomar, Lama Tamashi Meini, why are you accusing me of sharing with him the Umvatumim, Lefisha Sha'alti Lo Be'elokim, you're accusing me of using the Umvatumim. V'zehu Ayom HaRishon, this is the first time. V'lo Hayiti Yodea Ki Kasho Be'enecha, I had no idea that this wasn't with your blessing. Ki Vorechu, he was running away. I had no idea that he was running because he told me that he was
on a mission.
Chalilali, is there a doc incorporates? Shem Hayiti Yodea, if I had known, Lo ayit yoseh, I certainly would not have done so. Umiatalo aseod, and I promise you, I will never do it again. You don't want this. You don't want it to have that access. Ubarechu mipanecha, and he's running from you. Lo ayit yodeh kosa, I knew nothing. Ayiti choshev mitchilan, I thought that he was loyal to you. Zachimelech plays dumb, which is probably accurate, meaning he did not know.
Because he didn't know.
And he says, he's never come to me to seek guidance to the Umvatumim before. This is the first time. If I had known that he was running away, I wouldn't have done it. If I had known that he was rebelling, I wouldn't have done it. I promise you I'll never do it again.
Well, that was true.
Okay? Never did it again. So in that context, the phrase Chalilali makes more sense, right? What he's saying to him is, Hayom achilot elisho be'elokim, not as a question, but as a statement. Not, is this the first time I've done it? Rashi, Radak says, no, this is the first time I have ever done this. Chalilali, God forbid I will never do it again. Al yisir melech bevdo davar, ki lo yadav decha b'chozot, because I knew nothing about it. That's
the second.
I like the interpretation except for one problem. It does not resolve my bigger question, which is,
why was he so upset about the Urim and Thummim?
Textual problem. Radak's interpretation leaves the question unanswered. Why is the Urim and Thummim conversation not in chapter 21? If that's really the crux of Shaul's anger, and Achimelech admits to it, but he says innocently, "I didn't know," right? Ignorance,
right?
Or ignorance of the law is not an excuse for the law. But if he, so why is that piece of information not in the story in chapter 21?
Can I ask another question, which is,
right,
when you're reading it, you're going from Yud Gimel right into Yud Dalet. Why is there this space or break before Vayan?
So spaces and breaks are often there between conversations between speakers. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. But they are, if they're there between speakers, usually refers to some kind of change, right? The king is speaking, now the Kohen is speaking.
So it's a not a time thing.
I don't think it's a time.
One came right after
the
other.
Yeah, no, I think it's one conversation.
Okay. Sorry.
I think it's one conversation.
Okay.
It's a third possibility. A third possibility is, it's not neither Rashi nor the Radak, but I like the third possibility. And that is that Hayom Hachiloti Lishov Elokim is not a statement nor a question. It's a denial. Hayom Hachiloti Lishov Elokim Chalilali. He came to seek guidance of Yom Betumim, God forbid. What are you talking about? Yom Betumim? He asked for me bread, I gave him bread. He asked for a sword, I gave him a sword. Urim v'tumim, what are you talking about? Only the king speaks to the Urim v'tumim. Hayom achiloti lishob elokim chalilali. I never did it. No, I have an enivra. It's made up. It's not true. It's not in chapter 21, and it didn't happen in chapter 22. And then Achimelech says to him, it's a false accusation, which is why it's the only one of the accusations he responds to, because the other ones are true. To the other ones, he says, I didn't know. But as to the Urim v'Tumim, Chalil Ali, what are you talking about?
The Doeg myth that made that up.
Right. And if that's true, then that piece of the story, Doeg made up. And it fits the persona.
Perfect.
Because Doeg was trying to exonerate himself as to why he stayed silent all these months. I stayed silent. He asked the Urim v'Tumim, and the Kohen answered him. I mean, I thought this was normal. This was part of it, right? Urim v'Tumim. That accusation throws all of the weight of Shaul's anger onto the shoulders of Achimelech, and off of Doeg, and Doeg, in a brilliant turn, Lechem. Oh, and by the way, he sought guidance of the Urim v'Tumim. And you can just see Shaul's face turn purple. Urim v'Tumim? He's speechless. So he turns to Achimelech, food and sword and the Urim v'Tumim. And Achimelech looks dumbfounded. What are you talking about? Urim v'Tumim, Chalilali.
That's the right one.
That sounds all right.
And now I understand why the story's it's not there. You talk about Doeg and the evil of his report. And now, with the response of Shaul, now all that anger and all that frustration and all of that, the anger is just ready to trounce and jump in. And now we get to Pasuk Tet Zion. Vayom Hamelech Mota Mot Achimelech Ata Vilcho Beit Avicha. You, Achimelech, and your household are dead. Now, who is his household?
The Kohanim.
The Kohanim, but which Kohanim? Which Kohanim?
Ben Achitov.
Right, the Kohanim. Where have we had Beit Avicha before? Who came with Achimelech to the palace?
You said all 85 of them.
Pasuk Yud Aleph. Meishlach HaMelech Lutot at Achimelech Ben Achitub HaKohen Ve'et Ko Beit Aviv HaKohanim Mot Tamut Achimelech Ata V'Cho Beit Avicha. Remember where they are. They're in
the
palace. They're not in Nod.
Oh, right.
They're in the palace. Achimelech and the Kohanim Ko Beit Aviv came to the palace. Shaul says, Motamut Atavicho Beit Avicha. You and your household, all the Kohanim standing there in the palace, are all going to be executed. Keep that in mind. I'm going to read the rest of the story, and then we're going to conclude. Right? We're not going to interpret. We're just going to read it because I want you to hear it. Vayomer Amelech LaRatzim Anitzavim Alav. So the king turns to all of his servants standing around. He's in the palace. It's a public conversation. He's got all his officers lined up with their swords. Sobu ve'mitu kohanei Hashem. Go now and kill all of the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? Which Kohanim? Achimelech and all of the Beit Aviv who are with him in the palace. Ki gam yadam im David v'chiyodu ki boreachu. They assisted David. They knew he was running away. V'lo galuot oznai. They didn't tell me. V'lo avu avdei melech. They didn't tell me. So he doesn't believe a word Achimelech says. Off with their heads immediately, all of them, Achimelech and all of his household. But it's Achimelech and his household, meaning Beit Aviv was standing in the palace. The servants standing around V'lo avu avdei ha-melech lishloach et yadam lifkoa b'kohanei Hashem. They're dumbfounded. This is unprecedented. This is not done. The Kohen is a parallel king. The Kohen has authority equal to the Kohen Gadol has authority equal to that of the king. The king has no right to execute the Kohen Gadol, and he certainly can't execute all of the Kohanim. This is unacceptable, and the servants of the king refuse to lift a finger. Servu. So vayomer ha-melech l'Doeg, so vata ufka b'kohanim. So he turns to Doeg and he says to Doeg, okay, you take care of it. Wait. Vayisov Doeg Adomi. So Doeg Adomi turns. Vayifkau b'kohanim. Vayamot bayamahu 85 ish nosei eifod bad. And he kills the 85 kohanim wearing the eifod. Who are those kohanim? The Beit Aviv was standing in the palace. And with that, the story would have ended. Except that Shaul handed this mission over to the most evil person in his kingdom. And so we read the next pasuk. Ve'et nov ir ha-kohanim hikal lefi cherev mi'ish v'yad isha mi'olel v'yad yonek v'shov ha-chamor v'sel lefi cherev. Doeg leaves the palace and he goes to the city of Nov. And he kills everybody in the city of Nov, which was not the command of the king. The king's command was Kohanim, Achimelech, and Beit Aviv. Doeg takes that mission, runs to the city of Nov, and he executes the entire city, man, woman, and child, down to the last animal. That's the part of the story we're going to talk about next week.
Were these Kohanim related to Eli?